told myself that I never would say some of those stupid things that I heard adults say. That everybody but the person who said it knew how dumb it was. But I find myself saying some of those things. And some of those things I don't say, but I feel. But because I know how everybody feels about them, I don't say them. But it doesn't mean they're not true. Like, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. Now, there's no way that that can make any sense to anybody except the person who said it or someone their age. But it doesn't mean it's not true, does it? And one of those things that I heard people say that I just thought, you know, this has to be one of the dumbest things somebody could say is, when an adult would say, I wish I could go back and be your age and know what I know now. And I really do feel that sometimes. Not that I want to go back. I don't wish I could go back and be your age, that the young people sitting here. I don't want to be your age. Your age is a lot harder than my age. And I do have some things that I wish I knew how to impress upon you as young people that I feel like would really be beneficial, but I know that just saying them, it's just the old man saying something, you know, that doesn't make any sense to you. But I wish I could impress some things upon you about making good decisions in life and not being popular, not letting that be so important in your life, and not letting friends that you have be such a strong negative influence in your life, because what you don't realize is those people that are so important to you in your life right now, they're going to go a completely different way than you are, and it's not going to be long until they have nothing to do with your life. And if you allow them cause you to make negative decisions and bad decisions in your life, it really is foolish that they had that much power over you, that they could help set your life on a course that may not be a good course, and then they're gone. I know three or four people that I have spoken to either on the email or something within the last 10 years that were in my graduating class in high school, but our lives have absolutely nothing to do with one another. But those people were so very important in my life at one time. And I have a lesson. I know that school's about to start back up soon. And I'd like to just say a few things to you, and I don't know if it'll mean anything to you or not. And there's some bleed over for all of us, whether we're young or whether we're not. I had, and still like to think that I have, a favorite fishing place, one of my favorite places in Louisiana. And it's not because it's so very productive, because it never has been just really, I never have just loaded the boat with fish. I've caught some most of the times that I go, but never have just really hit it really big, but it's because of where it is and what it looks like. It's a creek, and it's large enough that you can run a large, fairly large boat in it, and you can open it up, but when you do, it kind of washes both sides of the creek out, which is kind of neat too, you know, but it has all these switchbacks on it that go back and forth, and when you learn where the channel is and how to come into a curve. I guess it's kind of like driving a race car. Whenever you come in high in some curves and you come in low on other ones and so forth, it's a lot of fun. And there are fish in it, but it's incredibly beautiful, particularly in the fall, because it has lots of hardwoods over it, and the colors are just gorgeous. And it's just lots of wildlife there, and you get to see something new every time you go. A few years ago, not enough for pulling such a silly stunt, but a few years ago, I decided I was going to go on a Saturday by myself Saturday evening. None of my buddies could go with me, so I just said, hey, I'm going to go by myself. I had a little Nissan pickup at that time and was pulling a boat that was too large for it, but that didn't mean anything to me. And while I was on the creek, a really big thunderstorm came up and lots of lightning was popping around, so I decided I better get off the water. And so I ran back and ran it up, you know, loaded it up and headed back in, and it started just as I got into the truck, it just, the bottom just dropped out. One of those just gully washers instantly. And so I was really proud of myself that I hadn't gotten wet and had my boat loaded up and was headed home. And it was a really desolate area that there's no traffic at all on, maybe one car every 30 minutes or something on this road going back to this creek. And it was an old road, and it had lots of hills and it curves. And one of the things, I learned a few things that day. One is that what people say about when it first starts raining, after it hasn't rained for a long time, you really need to watch the highway because it gets slick initially until you get some wash on it. Well, I topped this hill and was coming down it with my little truck and my boat, and it was about at least 200 yards to the bottom of the hill, and I noticed as soon as I topped that hill that a large tree, there was some wind that was associated with the thunderstorm, a large, extremely large pine tree had fallen all the way across the road. And it was a country road, and so it came out of the woods on one side, went into the woods on the other side. There was no way to go around it. And so it didn't really, I didn't think that much about it at that time, but I knew that obviously I needed to stop. Well, there was a guy just as I topped the hill, that an older man who was kind of crippled up, and he had heard the tree fall from his house, and he knew the danger of somebody coming over the hill and that tree being there, and so he had climbed up that hill, and he had heart problems, and he was really huffing and puffing when he got near the top of the hill, but he hadn't quite gotten to the top of the hill when I came along. So I topped the hill and was coming over, and there he was on the side of the road waving his arms like this, you know, for me to stop. Well, I looked and saw the tree, and so I started stopping, or at least I thought that I was going to stop. But I couldn't stop. And so, you know, I locked the brakes up, and that doesn't work. I'm sliding. And so I get off and start tapping the brakes, and that doesn't work. And by somewhere in all this, I go by this old gentleman. He's just waving his arms like this as I go by, you know. And so I'm saying, you know, like this, I can't stop. And so I think, okay, if I get off, I've got plenty of time. I can stop 5 times, you know. If I get off the side of the road and get in the grass a little bit, maybe that'll give me a little traction. Well, that didn't help any. So I get back on the road, and all this time I'm sliding, and the boat is pushing my little pickup. And I'm going down, and it's getting closer, and it's getting obvious how large this tree really is. It's a really large pine tree. And so it becomes obvious. I mean, I'm sliding like 200 yards. And I haven't slowed down at all. In fact, when I put on my brakes, it feels like I speed up. And I'm not getting any traction. And so somewhere in this process, I realize, okay, I'm going to hit this tree. So I start thinking, do I want to hit it up where the branches are? Or do I want to hit it, you know, at its base? How do I want to hit this? It's not a choice of whether, it's just, you know. So I first think, okay, I need to go through the top. And then I realize the branches are pretty good size, and if I break them off, they may come through the windshield, and that may be a really bad deal. So I decide, okay, I'm not going to go through the top. I'm going to just hit it head on. And I must have slowed down some, because when I hit it, I was probably doing 35 miles an hour. But that's still pretty hard to hit something solid and stop, and you have a boat behind you that's pushing you. So anyway, I totaled my little truck out, and the boat came over and twisted the back end of the truck, and it twisted the tongue of the trailer and so forth. So, you know, I didn't get hurt, but I'm in this mess and have to get some help. I don't have a cell phone or anything. If I did, it didn't matter because there's no coverage out there anyway. But I have to get help, and we have to come get it later and so forth. But that reminded me of how everything can be going along in your life just the way you're just happy as you can be, and all of a sudden things are out of your control. And as I thought about that, there's all kind of parallels, but what really struck my mind was how sin takes control of your life and you think you can stop. But you realize that sin is controlling you and you can't stop. And there are some consequences that you're headed for in your life that you tell yourself for a long time, it's not going to happen to me. I know it happens to lots of people, but it's not going to happen to me. And then one day, something happens that you wake up and realize it is going to happen to me. It's obvious that I'm about to pay some consequences that I didn't want to pay at all. And it was because of some decisions that I made back earlier that I just thought it would be fun, or I thought it would be cool, or whatever. Whenever I was a teenager, the cool thing to do, and this is back in the 60s, that you've heard so much about, that everybody now thinks it was really cool. I've had lots of kids tell me, boy, it must have been really cool to live in the 60s. Well, it wasn't so cool, not where I was anyway. But the cool thing to do was to wear a t-shirt and put a pack of cigarettes in it and roll it up and drive your car with your arm hung out like this with your pack of cigarettes rolled up in your sleeve. And that made you cool. And if you were really cool, then obviously you smoke. And even though it seems like it's really old, my dad died from lung cancer when he was younger than I am today, because he smoked a couple of 3 packs of Camels a day much of his life. And it wasn't so cool sit in the hospital with him as he died of cancer, knowing that he was dying of cancer and in extreme pain. And there are consequences to be paid. And we don't think it's going to happen to other people. We know it happens to other people, but it's not going to happen to me. But the odds are it is going to happen to you. And you can't avoid all the consequences. Let me give you 3 true scenarios. A high school student who had plans to be a preacher got his girlfriend pregnant. He told her that he had made arrangements for her to have an abortion. He would pick her up late one night for her to slip out the window and meet him on the street. And she did. And when she got in the car, rather than taking her where he promised to take her, he took her out and he killed her. And today he's in prison for life. He's not a preacher. She's dead. Sin robbed him of all of his dreams, of his pride, of his friends, of his reputation, of his innocence, and his freedom. A high school athletic coach, first job, wife and new first baby girl, had lots of dreams and aspirations, loved working with kids, nothing better in his life than working with kids, became immorally involved with a student, was immediately fired, has a criminal record, numerous other consequences. He can't get a job doing what he always loved doing. Sin robbed him of his pride, of his dreams, of his reputation, of his future, and of his freedom. A high school basketball player, just graduated, for whatever reason, robbed a pawn shop with a handgun. They caught him 3 miles down the road in a roadblock. The last I heard, he's still in jail. Sin robbed him of his pride, his reputation, his freedom, and very likely his future. There's something really interesting about sin. Sin will kill you. It's going to kill you if it's not taken care of. But it doesn't do it cleanly. It's really, really messy. And Satan really, really loves to mess up your life before he takes you out. It tortures you. It humiliates you. It robs you. It takes away your dignity and your pride and your reputation. And even though you can't believe it on the front end, it takes your freedom away. You think that this is the essence of freedom, whatever it is that you're doing. But you find yourself without choices in your life. And it robs you of choices that you otherwise would have. And these people that I've given you these scenarios are the ones that got caught. Do you think any of them started out thinking that they were going to get caught? Not a single one. Not a single one. But there's something that you need to know. It may be a lot worse not getting caught than getting caught. And I know that that doesn't make any sense to you, and that's something that some old guy would say. But that's the truth. Because if you don't get caught, you continue to live a lie. And you feel like you got away with it. And you find yourself living with a guilty conscience. It's pretty cool when it starts out, or at least it feels like it's going to be. But it's not very long until you feel the hypocrisy, particularly if you have some of Christ's word in you. And you're smiling on the outside, but you're dying on the inside. Because you're two people. You're one person here, and you're one person here. A completely different person. It's a play act. You're living two lives. And you also need to know that the truth is, you haven't and you will not get away with it. 100% guarantee. You will not get away with it. The things, the Lord said, the things that are done in secret will be shouted from the housetops. One day, everybody is going to know, sooner or later. In Romans chapter 6, verse 23, the wages of sin is death. You've heard that 1,000 times. Romans 8, 13, for if you live according to the sinful nature, you will die. Romans 14, 15, each of us will give an account of himself to God. Sin takes control of your life. And it really makes a mess out of your life. We don't have control anymore. Our choices get taken away. It takes away our freedom. In fact, sin starts making our choices for us. It sets us on a course, on a path, that we're no longer making the decisions. Sin is making the decisions for us. We start lying, and our road is set. We start being deceitful, we start being hypocritical, and sin starts making our decisions for us. And we lose control of our lives. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 6, speaking of a person who's living in sin, it says she's dead even while she yet lives. She just doesn't know it yet. Sin always leaves scars. I know you've heard the story of the little boy who had a habit of lying. And his dad tried everything that he knew to try to stop him. I won't belabor the story because I'm sure you've heard it. But he told him, he said, son, every time you tell a lie, I'm going to drive a nail in the door frame here to your bedroom. And so the boy, every time he told a lie, his dad would go and he'd drive a nail in there. And he just thought that was pretty cool. You know, he was wanting to see how many nails he could get in. And so the nails accumulated until and time passed by and his dad just kept on and was consistent with this. And a time came when it started bothering him as he passed in and out of that door. And he saw all of those nails, each one of them representing a lie. And so he finally went to his dad and he asked him to take the nails out. And he said, son, I won't take them out, but I'll let you take them out. He said, from now on, every time I ask you or your mom asks you something and you tell the truth, we'll take one nail out. And so one at a time, those nails began to come out. And finally the day came when it was down to that very last nail. And it was time for it to come out, and his dad pulled that last nail out. They stood looking at it, and he thought that he was really going to be happy, and he said, "Well, Dad, we've got the nails out, but what about all these holes that are left?" And he said, "Son, sin leaves scars. It always does. There is no sin that does not scar. There is no sin that's so small that it does not leave scars. And those scars accumulate over time. Some are more obvious and more hurtful than others. Betrayed confidences. Friendships that have been betrayed. Lying. Immorality. Cheating. Pre-marriage sex. Drunkenness, uncontrolled anger, rebellion against parents, hatred, envy. Every form of ungodliness leaves a scar on you, and most of the time, if not all the time, on someone else. Your sin leaves scars on other people. And the motto that says, "Just do it," may tell more about your character than you want it to tell. Forget the consequences, it says. Don't worry about who it hurts. Just do it. And it's just a short that used to be, if it feels good, do it. And now it's just do it. How about if we just don't do it? It'll change your life. Be a virgin when you're married. It'll change your life. And it will change it for the better. You have no fear. You don't have to live with deceit. You don't have any guilt to live with. Just don't do it. Don't drink alcohol. You can live without drinking alcohol. Don't take drugs. Don't have sex before you get married. Your life will be far, far richer if you just don't do it. I promise you that. And I know you think that's just an old man who doesn't know what he's talking about. And if that's the way you want to write it off, then write it off that way. It's one of those things that I can understand why somebody would say he doesn't really know what he's talking about. That's your decision to make. The thing that makes, one of the things that makes sin so deadly is it appears harmless on It is fun. It usually begins as being fun, as being cool. I was watching a documentary some time back on prisons, and one of the places that they showed was a particularly sinister high-security prison in Kentucky. And they had an extremely high guard tower that was manned by snipers, people that had been trained as snipers. And in the evening, that high tower was situated so that it cast a shadow in the evening almost all the way across the entire prison yard. And for the dinner meal, they had all of the convicts come out into the prison yard and line up for the dinner meal, and every one of them passed through the shadow of that guard tower. And it came to be known as the shadow of death. There's never been an escape there because of what that shadow represented. When Zechariah, John the Baptist's dad, was told, or dad-to-be at that time, was told by an angel that he was going to have a son, he didn't believe it because of his age. And the angel Gabriel rendered him speechless for 9 months until the baby boy was born. And the first words that he uttered about Jesus, are among those first words, were these: "And you, my child, will be called the prophet of the Most High, for you will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of their sins. Because of the tender mercy of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven to shine on those living in, quote, darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace. A picture of John's ministry and Jesus that was to come. Like the sun, he said, rising sun, shining on people who are in darkness, who are living in darkness and in the shadow of death. That characterizes the world, living in darkness and the shadow of death. And so you can choose in your life, you will choose, you do choose, whether you'll live in the darkness and the shadow of death and make decisions that will keep you in that darkness and in the shadow of death, or either you can live in the light of rising sun. And that's choices that you make every day. And I really do hope for you individually that you make good, wise, right decisions. You know what's right. Your parents have taught you. Your Bible class teachers have taught you. You know what's right. And so I want to give my word of encouragement, or whatever it's worth, or whatever value it is to you, that you step into the sunlight of God's righteousness and you live there. And you live there consistently. And you're going to be surprised what the Lord's going to do with your life if you consistently make right decisions when there's pressures all around you to make those wrong decisions. Those people that it's so important for you to be popular with today, they're not going to have anything to do with your life in just a few years. And so keep in mind, the decisions that you make have everything to